This podcast series is not meant for retail investors, but instead is meant for financial advice and investment professionals. Please refer to IMAP's website, imap.asn.au, for more details.
Welcome to this podcast in our IMAP Independent Thought Series. It's my pleasure to welcome today joining us Tim Murphy from Morningstar and Stephen Furness from MGD Wealth. Now, we're going to be discussing the performance of the markets over the past year and the outlook for the year ahead. Certainly, plenty of things to talk about in there, and it's been quite an exciting start to this year, so we'll have a look at that as we go along as well. Tim, maybe if I can start with you. We've seen last year continuation of the COVID pandemic, lockdowns. We've seen talk about inflation and interest rates as the year moved on. So how did you see markets performing against this background in 2021?
It was obviously, incredibly strong year for risk assets. So, equities, broadly and, in an Australian context, specifically unhedged international equities, did exceedingly well, close to 30% at an index level. So, there was some, dispersion around that and some stories within from both a, a regional, stylistic and sector basis that, that led to some of that. But in most cases, it is hard not to have had a good year investing in global equities over the course of 2021. Australian equities still, sharply positive, up 17-odd% for the year. Obviously, that's a strong outcome in an absolute sense for investors. Other assets like infrastructure and listed property, also did, well, either in, mid-teens or up over 20%, depending on how you slice and dice that. The returns were not as good in the defensive side of things, in particular fixed income. For finally, we saw, some of the commentary and risks around inflation, come to bear in 2021. Which end up seeing rising bond yields in most major developed markets, which did lead to sort of mildly negative, absolute returns in bond markets, over the course of 2021. So again, just using the main indices, Aussie fixed income was down 2.87% for the year and global fixed income down 1.53% when hedged into Aussie dollars over the course of the year. So, certainly, lots of chat. No doubt we'll talk about, the inflation scenario and what that means for defensive portfolios, but, some slightly negative returns, but in the course of or context of an overall diversified portfolio, when your equities did mid-teens, pushing 30% in the global sphere, some mildly negative returns in the fixed income space isn't going to blow up too many portfolios.
So I was thinking the average sort of balance fund would have had a pretty good year, which probably isn't what we might have expected at the start of the year, given the pandemic and economic worries there.
Yeah, exactly right. It's a classic case of not letting the sort of the news or the backdrop of macro concerns color how you flavor how you go about investment positioning. Certainly you need to be conscious of those things, but obviously as last year demonstrated, despite all of those factors going on in the world, when you've got major equity markets up 20-30%, it's there was a lot of money to be made that obviously a lot of us did make when allocated to lots of these risk on assets.
So Stephen, how did your clients find things last year? I mean, as Tim just said, returns were generally pretty good. What sort of major concerns did you see clients have during the year?
Yeah, thanks, David. Obviously we're coming from an advice point of view rather than and let the likes of Tim run the money. But I think the big surprise for last year, or the big, obviously advice businesses have a lot of retired clients and that fixed interest sector, the defensive part, not every retiree can afford a risk-on sort of portfolio, right? So the defensive fixed interest elements, either part of a balanced fund or just aspects of a broader portfolio, that was the challenge for the year. Not unexpected, but that was, the negatives coming out of fixed interest funds or the like. Certainly retirees don't really understand that dynamic, and, some of the client-level conversations, even on low duration type fixed interest strategies, certainly the second half of last year, some of the negative returns coming out of that is a conversation point with clients from an explanation point of view. That was probably one observation. And I guess it, on the risk side of things, certainly on equities, some of the numbers I see, and Morningstar is one of our partners, it was sort of tale of two halves of the year. Mm-hmm. A lot of strong returns early in the year from a lot of those growth style managers in equities, and a big, you know, obviously January part of that retracement, but it wasn't just January in terms of a lot of those, the turnaround in value managers. So it's really, it appeared to be sort of two years in one type of stuff, or two styles in one occurring in equities last year.
Yeah, I guess that's been the thing, hasn't it, Tim? It's been a big switch there in styles and sector performances.
Yeah, definitely. There was certainly a big rotation, you know, in the fourth quarter compared to earlier in the year. You know, Stephen alluded to, you know, a lot of the growth, you know, tech-oriented sectors that had led performance for much of the year. You know, were not as strong at the end of the year, and you saw some sharp rebound in some of the traditional value sectors, most notably energy, but then also to a lesser degree financials as well. So, you know, most of us familiar with the, you know, rising energy prices, you know, of late, that's really sort of pushed through in a lot of the numbers there. And so you've seen, you know, what's been a sort of 10-year trend of growth managers leading value quite comfortably globally. You go through a couple of periods, and that continued well into January, Stephen alluded to, where we, you know, we've now seen big, sharp outperformance from, you know, value approach, you know, as some of those sector rotations taken place. We've seen some of the tech names sell well, you know, in some cases well off their highs, and, you know, sectors like energy leading four. And so that's certainly, you know, I think it's a good reminder for everyone that, you know, having appropriate diversification of, you know, styles and sectors and countries and whatnot is always, you know, prudent when thinking about portfolio construction. Certainly there's been lots of discussion in, you know, last few years about will value ever come back. I think, you know, none of us know the answer to when the market turns, but when it does, it can do it in a hurry, as it's done the last couple of months. And so you need to be there when that happens, not thinking about it after the fact.
Yeah.
And David, some of the, you know, I can only reflect on what we do as a business and what we have done in recent years. But I do wonder about some of the numbers in terms of either, you know, self-directed investors, but what other advice businesses might be doing. And like that growth story, you know, and growth managers in equities, like a lot of those big returns came 2019, 2020. And if you weren't on that train then and you've got onto it late, you know, as sometimes happens with investor psychology and FOMO, you know, I'm just wondering, you know, the actual experience of investors might be different to what the long run numbers of individual managers sort of suggest, that, you know, people coming late to the growth story might be
momentum and last year's winners is never a good strategy, is it? I mean, one thing that interests me there, where Tim was talking about the energy stocks, and, you know, we hear a lot about ESG these days and clients asking for ethical portfolios, and, you know, one of the obvious ones is funds not buying oil, gas, coal. Do you think that would have impacted a lot of the ethical funds in the last little while?
Yeah, it's definitely impacted from a relative performance sense, a significant number of ESG themed funds. So, and not all exclusive, but certainly many that, you know, flat out like screen out sectors like energy. Then yeah, absolutely. If you screen out the best performing sector, it's going to be hard to do well in that environment. You know, I will say that, you know, there is a very wide range of ESG approaches out there. So some apply that approach. You know, others might be on the opposite end of the spectrum and looking at more, you know, how they involve themselves or investing companies looking to make that transition that might be involved in those sectors. And so, you know, look to, you know, have exposure in that sense. So you do tend to see a fairly wide dispersion of outcomes depending on the particular approach. And that's where individual, you know, fund by fund due diligence is really important to understand, you know, those differences. I think, you know, there's been some sort of what I call fairly lazy commentary in recent years about, you know, ESG outperforming, you know, non-ESG, you know, investments. You know, a lot of that, you know, and depending on how you slice and dice the numbers, you can certainly build some numbers to support that argument. But a lot of that has just been driven by being overweight, you know, tech and healthcare underneath that, which have been two of the better performing sectors for most of the last 5 years or so. And so, you know, that cuts both ways. And as we've seen recently, you know, with the energy sector taking off and to a lesser degree financials, you know, many ESG funds have underperformed in the last little while. Now, I think, you know, the important takeaway there isn't that, you know, ESG is bad. I think it's you can still build an ESG portfolio, but you need to take the same considerations that you'd build any portfolio in the sense of having diversity of style and approach, and underlying exposures. So, you know, there's While I would say of the ESG options available in funds in Australia, there's definitely a skew to more growth-oriented portfolios. There's definitely some more value-oriented ones whom, if you've been invested with them, they have done very well in the last couple of months as a value market, as we discussed, has rebounded. Those that have been heavy on tech have clearly not done as well in that period.
Okay, interesting. Now we should go on and talk about this year and what's ahead of us, but I guess the year's gone off to quite an exciting start, and maybe it's worthwhile just focusing on January a little bit before we do move on. What do you think has been the main drivers there, Tim? Is it just a follow-on of what we saw at the end of last year, or the sort of new factors that have come in?
Look, definitely been a continuation of what started in December, but it's certainly accentuated. And for the first time in a while, we have seen healthy pullback in risk assets, across the board. As I mentioned earlier, in many cases, a lot of the assumptions baked into some of the high growth names really have been reliant on strong growth assumptions. And as those have reported recently, some of those have missed those expectations, and you've seen big sharp sell-offs as a result. And certainly Facebook, or Meta as it's now known, and Netflix are sort of two prominent examples in the last couple of weeks where we've seen that take place. And so that sort of then continued this trend of growth stocks being re-rated backwards, while we've seen stronger outperformance continue from the value side of the equation. So it's definitely, we've seen some big reversals in markets, some big reversals in the relative performance of prominent funds, and definitely keeping everyone on their toes from a portfolio construction perspective.
So you think there's been a bit of sort of stock specific results driven type stuff in there, or is it a bit of both, that and the macro drivers still continuing?
No, I'd say that we definitely think it's a bit of both. There's certainly, from an overall picture, people are worried about market valuations. They're worried about the effects on a look-through basis of if inflation, and if the high inflation is sustained over the course of 2022. So there's definitely more caution in the wind as a result of that. And in particular, once you sort of you think about valuation models, and if you bake in higher rates to future discount levels, and that has a bigger negative effect on the current value of growth stocks relative to value. So you've seen a sort of broad re-rating downwards as a result of that. But then there has been a couple of then stock specific big misses that I touched on, that you've seen. Facebook was off to 26% on the day, yes, I think last week. So you've definitely seen that across the board.
I think, David, it's valuation matters, right? Sometimes we forget about the sector. All of us can get caught up and not think too much about valuations, but at the end of the day, at some point in time, they do matter. And the higher growth sectors are clearly the ones to be more mindful of. And when the big guys want to go into a risk off sort of mode for a while, that's what's going to happen, right? So, but you look at some of there's equity funds that have printed a positive number in January, and quite a few of them, the ones that we as an industry were wondering whether they still knew what they were doing.
Yes.
And they've printed they've printed some pretty positive numbers in January because of they stuck to their style and good diversified portfolios, had sensible allocations to those sort of strategies. So valuation still matters, diversification still matters, and these are the times where you want that, contributing to your portfolio.
Yeah. Stephen, you said that last year, clients, particularly maybe the retired ones, were worried about fixed income outcomes and struggling with a negative return from fixed income. So, and how are you finding January? Are you getting many more calls from clients concerned about market performances, equities, and so on? Or
Not so much in January for the fixed interest thing. But we, as a business, as an advice business, probably from about May last year, we went a substantial project in terms of actual client advice and implementation around the composition of their fixed interest element of their broader portfolio, and a lot of advice given and implemented to reposition that. So yeah, not so much a January 2022 conversation. We were sort of actively doing something about that sort of most of last year. Has put us in good stead compared to just owning index style fixed interest. So that's been pleasing outcome just from our business point of view. Clients require a bit of explanation of what you're trying to achieve because, you know, fixed interest, they don't really understand the day-to-day valuation methodology in fixed interest markets. Mm. So, but that's proven to be a worthwhile strategy.
Okay. Well, you should probably move on and talk about the year ahead. I guess the big question, Tim, really up front is, you know, is January, that's it, the correction we had to have that everyone's been talking about, or do you see sort of more volatility struggles in markets in the next 11, 10 and a half months we have still to go this year?
Yeah, we're pretty cautious on the outlook from here. While certainly the volatility generally certainly delivered a pullback and, therefore things are better value than they were 4 to 6 weeks ago, we still think there's potentially a lot further that could go. So I think, we're in an environment now where, there's lots of mixed signals depending on which metric you like to look at. Some are broadly positive, but others, not so supportive for investment returns from here. And so with that sort of mixed bag outlook, I think, it's definitely, our view that you want to maintain, broad exposure in your portfolios to different assets that aren't, aren't correlated, so that regardless of what market environment plays out, you're going to be able to, survive and thrive, through that cycle and not have any one event, really hurt you because you took a view and you were wrong. So that's certainly, with that mixed bag of signals, having broad exposure to, different sectors and different approaches that isn't overly reliant on a high inflation environment or a low inflation environment or a risk off or risk on trade, we think is pretty crucial at this point.
So does that then lead to, sort of no big asset class calls, as it were? You've been a little bit cautious, or are there particular asset classes that you still favour?
Yeah, so we're broadly neutral on, equities versus defensives. I think, bonds are clearly, yields have risen in the last, 12 to 15 months. So they're better value now than they were if we're having this conversation this time a year ago. But that's not to say that they, there may not be, further rises in bond yields, which would be negative as a result. I think that, the way we think about that, though, is also in the context of a broader portfolio sense, so that, if you were to have a big risk off environment, in the equity market, bonds can still play a defensive role in that scenario. So there's, again, depending on the profile of the client is going to depend on how much you're going to have exposure to one versus the other on that one. But, not having any one particular massive bet driving portfolios, we think, is pretty important.
What about sort of, alternative things like everything from infrastructure to private equity, hedge funds? Do you still recommend those sort of asset classes to clients?
Yeah, so we in the listed space, certainly we can and do use and recommend exposure to listed infrastructure and listed property, both domestically and globally. Again, you saw some after a period of weakness, you saw some very strong returns in those sectors in the back end of the year. So they had been hurt by views on interest rates previously, but you saw some really sharp tick up in some of the numbers in those sectors in the back end of the year. So we're probably cautious about adding, particularly to REITs at this point. We're probably more constructive on this infrastructure, from that perspective. On the unlisted side, it's a trickier one. I think a couple of things. Obviously, it's less transparent, and it's certainly a flavor of the month. It's hard to go to any sort of industry event at the moment where someone's not trying to push or promote the role of private assets, be that credit or equity, in different portfolios, or presenting that as great ideas. Potentially that is the case, but clearly at an advice level, that is more problematic to implement the liquidity, restrictions that go with that. And in particular, so if you're running a managed account program, trying to incorporate that is nigh on impossible. Certainly comes with a lot of issues if you attempt to do that. So, certainly in a managed account framework, it's not an area where we're spending much time.
And, in terms of the sort of interest rate outlook, I mean, there's people now talking about the Fed putting rates up at every meeting this year, and you know, the RBA people have gone from no rate rises in Australia to rate rises in second half to now people talking about May. Where does Morningstar see the interest rate outlook generally?
Yeah, well, certainly, I mean, all of those things are known, right? And, you know, you can look in the bond market at the forward yield curves in terms of what's implied in terms of expected rate rises. I mean, the interesting thing we've sort of been discussing a lot in the last week, you know, since, you know, Governor Lowe's comments, you know, last week, were that, you know, he was certainly seemed to be talking down the at least the number and you know, the when the next rate rise may happen in Australia. So, you know, the bond market's been implying, you know, 4 rate rises this year. You know, if you listen to Governor Lowe's speech last week, I don't think you would have walked away from that thinking that the RBA is likely to raise rates 4 times this year.
No,
so,
no.
You know, the trajectory is clearly would appear to be upwards from this point. But from an investment portfolio construction perspective, you think about where the trajectory lands versus the current expectations in market. That's sort of the key decision or key issue to think about in terms of what's going to then drive investment returns from this point forward.
Yeah, it certainly seems to be still a sort of RBA versus the market challenge out there, isn't it? You know, the market keeps pricing in rate rises, and even after last week, the bank still seems to be saying, no, we're not going to do it. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out. I mean, one asset class we haven't mentioned, and I know, Stephen, you did say at one stage that it's something clients do ask a lot about, and that's crypto, maybe slightly left field. But is it something you see clients actually investing in, Stephen? Is it something that they're keen on, or...?
Certainly selectively in high net wealth space, there's certainly been conversations, you know, over the course of the last year or so on specific investments in crypto. You know, at a retail level, it's clearly a conversation piece, and I imagine that will only increase over the years ahead. I'm a little bit old school and don't quite know where it fits into portfolio construction. But certainly one of our leading asset consultants, a big global asset consultant, you know, believes that it will build momentum either as a asset class, like crypto, investing in crypto, or just the whole technology behind all of that, how it flows through the financial system. We had a big discussion on it yesterday, and you know, the way shares are traded, the timeframes for fund, the whole implications of the back end of that whole technology, I suspect, will have an increasing role in financial systems and markets. That's a little bit different to specifically investing in crypto, but yeah, certainly a conversation. There's managers coming out, as we know, with solutions. You know, PI insurance needs to get their head around, regulation needs to get their head around, regulators, how it might form part of the advice business. But our business, we're just not on the train of having it part of our advice process just yet.
Tim, is it something Morningstar have looked at?
Look, you know, we don't have a sort of formal house view or anything on crypto per se. It's definitely permeating bottom-up client queries, often by, you know, the younger generation that have been interested in it. I think it's fair to say those queries have gone down significantly in number in the last couple of months, in line with the price of most cryptos, on, you know, notably Bitcoin. So when it's only a couple of months ago, you know, we were getting questions like, you know, is Bitcoin an inflation hedge? At, you know, 40% down. Later, those queries haven't had any of those year to date so far. So, you know, I think there's, I agree with Stephen's comment that, you know, the underlying blockchain technology, you know, clearly would appear to have, you know, broader applications. You know, the role of, you know, cryptocurrencies in a portfolio, probably still an open question. The one thing you can get guaranteed, it's going to bring volatility. So, that's very evident without debate.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, I think that's been great. You know, we've covered a lot. We've gone through what was quite an exciting 2021, and particularly, you know, some good returns, but some concerns coming at the end of the year. And sounds like still both of you are quite cautious on the outlook for the year ahead. And we've had a fairly rocky start to that, so we'll see how it goes. So I'd just like to thank Tim Murphy from Morningstar and Stephen Furness from MGD Wealth.